Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Thursday, April 23rd, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre. A business group is proposing an increase in the corporate minimum tax and a three-year surcharge on corporate income taxes.
The House Health Committee passed a bill yesterday creating an Oregon Health Authority.
And former U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice personally approved the use of enhanced interrogation techniques.
Portland area weather mostly cloudy in the north with a slight chance of showers. Highs in the mid-60s. Tonight mostly cloudy and cooler. Possible showers and then the same for tomorrow.
And first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. Right at this very moment, we are trying to get Ginger Salkowski of Revolution Gardens on the line. Revolution Gardens and Kingfisher Farms are located on Oregon Highway 53 outside of Nehalem. They are organizations and organic farms that deliver produce to CSA subscribers. This gives farmers capital to work with in the off-season as well as to gauge how much they should plant in the spring for summer's bountiful harvest. TSAs are really the way of the future, and we are going to try very hard to have Ginger join us on the air very soon in the future.
The House Health Committee passed a bill creating an Oregon Health Authority. The proposed entity would oversee health reform. Oh boy, more money to pay experts to study why poor people can't afford health care. The health authority would oversee most of the state's health care programs. It would spend the next 2 years organizing and planning for its new duties and for establishing an insurance exchange.
Why not just pay for health, use the money to pay for health care rather than studying health care? Anyway, what do I know? A business group is proposing an increase. This is interesting. A business group is proposing an increase in the corporate minimum tax and a three-year surcharge on corporate income taxes to help close a state budget gap of $3 billion or more in the next 2 years. Yesterday, the Oregon Business Association said that preserving vital services will take shared sacrifice requiring spending cuts and tax increases. Among the group's proposals are an increase in Oregon's corporate minimum tax, a doubling of the corporate filing fee, and a temporary surcharge of 1 percentage point on Oregon's corporate tax of 6.6%, which the group said would generate $200 million.
After nearly 2 years of high-risk loans driving record numbers of Portland-area homeowners into default, lenders are seeing a second bigger wave of foreclosures. Unemployment is the problem. Since late 2008, the jobless rate and the number of foreclosures have been rising together in Oregon and Southwest Washington. It's a classic feedback loop producing social problems that could take years, if not decades, to repair.
Probably much, much more time than it'll take for the economy itself to recover. The Employee Free Choice Act is one of Labor's biggest priorities going into this session of Congress, but now it appears to be losing political momentum. The bill would make it possible for employees to establish union representation without holding a secret ballot election of workers. The bill's questionable future is great news to employers and the attorneys who love them.
Oregon Attorney General John Kroger promised in his campaign to step up prosecution of environmental crimes. Since taking office in January, he's been quietly assembling the state's first team of attorneys to focus exclusively on going after polluters.
And one of our top environmental criminals is, of course, in the news. Yesterday, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency proposed rules that would drastically limit airborne mercury emissions from the nation's cement kilns, many of which are located here in Oregon. Predictably, the Portland Cement Association came out strongly against the regulations, calling them unachievable. The EPA said that the benefits of the proposed rules, which would limit mercury and other toxic emissions from most kilns, outweigh the cost, and the pollution controls could save 620 to 1,600 people's lives annually.
Marion County Sheriff Rush Isham says no thanks to a proposal from U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement to use the county jail as a holding place for undocumented immigrants. The deal would have meant an influx of federal money for Marion County. Isham's decision was criticized by anti-immigration activists.
And there we enter into the dark labyrinth that the undocumented immigrant inhabits in this country. That's the first of three stories we have for you here. Portland Indy Media reports that the current operating contract for the Northwest Detention Center expires at midnight tonight. Because of delays caused by the Bill of Rights Defense Committee Tacoma, this contract will have to be extended on an emergency basis. A request for proposals has only just been released on April 20th. The current contract expires tonight, as I said, so a modification and extension of the current one are required for continued operation until this current contract is let to a new operator. None of this is good news for undocumented people who are currently in detention.
And the Washington Senate has passed a measure that clears the way for the State Department of Corrections to send imprisoned undocumented immigrants to federal custody and likely deportation. The bill is part of Governor Gregoire's attempts to cut spending in light of a $9 billion deficit through the next 2 years. The bill now goes to the House. State officials have said that prisoners serving time for violent crimes would not be transferred.
And it turns out that time really is money. More Oregon jails are charging inmates up to $60 a night. Douglas and Klamath County jails have been doing it for several years, and this week the Springfield City Council voted to join them, immediately charging Springfield inmates held at the Lane County Jail in Eugene, and later this year charging inmates in the new Springfield Municipal Jail expected to open in October.
U.S. Department of Energy says it's okay for the largest known colony of bats in eastern Washington to stay in its underground home at Hanford. The 2,000 bats live in a concrete structure once used to hold Columbia River water before it was used at a reactor. The tiny bats, a species called Yuma myotis, are smaller than a mouse. They seem to like their underground home, which hasn't been used by anyone else for 30 years.
They're adorable. Governor Ted Kulongoski appears to be staking his legacy on the electric car, never mind the fact that the car still requires some sort of power generation to produce the electricity. If you've gone and blown the whole budget on a 12-lane bridge, you've got to put something on it. This time, it's Mitsubishi the governor is courting.
Electric companies are warning lawmakers that prices will go up if Congress passes a global warming bill that doesn't give utilities some allowances to emit greenhouse gases. A House panel heard from representatives of rural cooperatives, utility commissions, and electric utilities about a bill to curb release of the greenhouse gases. The providers say the best way to keep the electricity sector from passing the cost on to customers is to give away, not sell, allowances to emit the pollution.
And on that note, we move on to national stories. In the news this week have been the torture memos, and, of course, torture has been hotly debated on Capitol Hill and across the nation. Of course, there is a side that says that torture is justified if it would have prevented 9/11. Of course, we knew that we didn't have to torture anybody. We had all the evidence that anybody possibly could have wanted that would have prevented 9/11 from happening. We just didn't act on it, so torture is out of the question. This also begs the question, many people have asked, does it really work? And the experts are pretty much unanimous on that question, that torture, of course, doesn't work because people will say anything to relieve themselves from acute pain. So we know that it really doesn't work. On the other hand, if it did work, is that still any reason to do it? Morally, you can't really make a case for that claim either. We're trying right now to get KBOO Spencer Raymond on the line to help us parse this conundrum. Are you there, Spencer? Good morning. We'll wait for just a moment, and then while Spencer is preparing to join us, we'll just mention a couple of issues here that have recently come up. Apparently, Condoleezza Rice signed off on torture, or at least enhanced interrogation techniques. This was a story that appeared in the India Times Online yesterday. Former U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice personally approved the use of waterboarding, the enhanced interrogation techniques, employed on terrorist suspects. Rice's role was revealed yesterday by the Senate Intelligence Committee, showing that she verbally approved the CIA's request for use of waterboarding on al-Qaeda suspects. This new timeline, and this is what's critical here, the new timeline indicates that Rice played a greater role than she admitted last fall in written testimony to the Senate Armed Services Committee. And again, in July of 2002, at a meeting between then-CIA Director George Tenet and Rice, Secretary of State, and this is a direct quote, advised that the CIA could proceed with its proposed interrogation of suspected al-Qaeda terrorist Abu Zubaydah. Then moving on up to 2003, the CIA briefed Rice, Vice President Dick Cheney, and John Ashcroft on the use of waterboarding and other methods. So there really is no question that our highest public officials actually did sign off on these techniques. It's not a question, actually, at this point, of whether it's illegal or not. It's whether it is morally justifiable. And I think that most reasonable people would agree that there is no circumstance on which this is ever justifiable, legal or not. The question of whether it works is drift so far into the realm of amoral considerations that it is truly dark water indeed, and a place that we really ought not to go. Liam, what have you got for us?
Jane Harman, the California Democrat who was allegedly caught on an FBI wiretap promising to help accused Israeli spies in 2005, has begun backtracking her original denials. Harman originally denied that she had agreed in a plot to get herself appointed chair of the House Intelligence Committee by getting an Israeli agent to work a major California donor to threaten to withhold campaign contributions from then-minority leader Nancy Pelosi. The call between Harman and the Israeli national was caught on an FBI wiretap as part of a broader Israeli espionage case. In an interview on NPR's All Things Considered, Harman began qualifying her answers under heavy questioning.
This is such a convoluted tale, and it's worth really pursuing, and you can certainly do that. There's more than abundant information online. The position that Jane Harman was after on the House Intelligence Committee would have given her enormous power, and of course her connections with AIPAC are irrefutable. What she's been up to is still very murky, and it's going to take a great deal of careful investigation to unearth what actually was going on here.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Thursday, April 23rd, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Emily Young. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio station at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, Flashpoints. Catherine Austin Fitz talks about the alleged suicide of David Kellerman, acting CFO at Freddie Mac, and Nora Barris Friedman interviews a leading activist against the illegal wall being built through occupied Palestine.
Thanks for listening and have a good day.